Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In the midst of protests calling for justice after the killings of Michael Brown Jr. and Fondera Myers Jr., Tiffany Robertson, a mother raising her children in the Shaw neighborhood, the same neighborhood where Myers lost his life, took up a very particular cause. By initiating a series of cross-racial conversations, Tiffany hoped to effect positive change in her backyard and her city. It's now been 10 years since that time. That discussion series, Touchy Topics Tuesday, has become an approach that's been tapped to help businesses and organizations across the St. Louis region lead staff in what Tiffany calls intentional integration. Here to share their stories are Tiffany Robertson, founder of Touchy Topics Tuesday, and joining her is Margaret Weck, one of the participants of Touchy Topics Tuesday. Tiffany and Margaret, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Elaine. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Tiffany, Touchy Topics Tuesday, as we noted in the introduction, it came about after the shooting deaths of Michael Brown Jr. and Fondera Myers Jr. and subsequent protests. What specifically, Tiffany, pushed you to have these conversations around race and experiences of Black people?
Yeah, so 10 years ago was a lot going on in my life. I had just retired from Bank of America, had just left my corporate job to what I thought was going to be a season of me staying home and raising my daughters, who were at the time 14 and 7. One was a freshman at Metro High School. The other one was, I want to say, maybe second or third grade. Can't really remember. But at the time that these two events happened, my 14-year-old daughter, Alana, it was her response to not necessarily the events themselves, but it was more her response the night that it was announced that the officer would not be indicted. The officer who was responsible for the Michael Brown killing.
Yes.
So the night of that announcement, I remember the schools closed. There was this tension in the air. There was already this awareness that something was going to happen. And so my husband, Lionel, and I tried to prepare my daughter for a worst case scenario of him not being indicted, the officer, Darren Wilson. So we were trying to prepare her, and she was 14 and very smart and very insistent that we lived in the world that she grew up in was now post-racial, like we didn't have this racial construct. And she was just adamant that justice would be served in the way that she saw it being served. And so when the indictment came down, my husband and I, she had even insisted on not watching the announcement with us.
She wanted to see it somewhere.
She was in another part of the house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like popcorn. It was ready to celebrate and come down and declare her victory to her parents, as most 14-year-olds are. Mm. But instead, when the announcement was made, my husband and I were on the first floor of our home. Alana was on the second floor in her room. And there was just a scream that came from her. It was a scream. She was broken. She was heavy. It just, you can feel the shift in her entire being. I could anyway, as her mother. And so that was the kind of the rallying call for me to, I often say that this broke my daughter, this person that I knew and I had tried to raise. She was different. She emerged from the second floor. She was solemn. Mm-hmm. And there was really no comfort that I could offer her. I knew that her entire world had shifted in that moment. And so my husband and I let her feel what she needed to feel. Mm-hmm. In that moment, we didn't try to comfort her. There were no words to comfort her. But later on, I did, or shortly after, I did pray, and I simply asked God. I said, this is really big, like all of this is really big, but if there is a response, if there is a way that you want me to respond,
I'll do it. Mm-hmm. And I've never said those words again because I'm still
still doing it.
No, and so that was kind of the birth of this journey of Touchy Topics Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's what got us here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Margaret, for you, at what point is it that you learned about Touchy Topics Tuesday and became part of it?
My first experience directly with Tiffany and the Touchy Topics Tuesday process happened in the summer of 2019. Mm. She got a group together of people who had been through DEI, racial justice training, through what is now Gateway Equity Institute, had a different name at the time. They called it the FACILA training process. So people who had been through that process, mm-hmm. and mixed race group, but then we went through the Touchy Topics Tuesday conversations after that point.
Yeah. Was there anything about what you were experiencing? Because between 2019 and 2014, there's quite a span of years. Had you already been having some cross-racial conversation?
That was actually the key feature of this that mm-hmm. intrigued me, was I had been engaging in diversity, equity, inclusion work, but I did not have opportunities to actually deeply engage with people of another race. I'm white. Mm-hmm. I just did not have opportunities to meet people and talk with people deeply about our differential experiences. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how much I craved it until I actually experienced it
right.
with Touchy Topics Tuesday.
And before we get much further, I'd like to have you describe, Tiffany, why Touchy Topics? Today is Tuesday. That was not at all planned,
so spot on, right? Yes.
But what was it about the approach that kind of made it different from maybe DEI kinds of trainings that you had received, for example, in the corporate world?
Yeah. So there are a couple of things. Number one, when we first began to talk, there were a lot of DEI people who came to Touchy Topics Tuesday, and one of the things I quickly realized is that the idea of conversation and how we engage was always centered around some type of rules, almost the Robert's Rules of Order, or some type mm-hmm. of rules of engagement. And it quickly made people have the conversations according to those rules, like those rules governed what they would say, how it would say it. And so those went out the window. And that kind of contributed to the name Touchy Topics, because if we're going to have this conversation about the things that are happening, like the two events, the events that were catalysts to this, we need to be able to say the quiet part out loud with all the feels, all the emotions, and all of the energy that comes from experiencing this individually and as a community. So one of the aspects of TTT is that the rules are created or yielded out of relationships. So, you know, if you're a parent, you often say, I often say, rules without a relationship yields rebellion. Like typically people rebel about that. But rules that are born out of the context of a relationship usually yield mutual respect. And it's not something that people have to be reminded of. It's just organically cultivated. And so that's one of the aspects. Another aspect would be the real-time processing. Mm-hmm. As far as a nuance or a standout factor from diversity, like you go into diversity trainings, you're right, even in corporate spaces or in organizations, and you're given all of this information to process. And then you have to go back to work and do the job that you're paid to do.
Right, right.
And so you really don't kind of hold that information or hold space for it. You check the box and said, I received it, I heard it, but then it probably goes on a shelf or just somewhere in the back of your brain that's not really activated in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
With Touchy Topics Tuesday, we are processing the subject, all of the emotions from all of the participants,
in that space around that topic, and that can be, it's very counterintuitive of how we're used to having conversations, especially with a racial context.
Right. Margaret, for you, is there a topic that you remember there being a conversation around, and there were those emotions, there was a level of candor or frankness that you had not experienced in other spaces with other approaches?
I'm actually trying to think of an instance where it didn't happen.
Oh, okay.
That was the norm.
And that's so, I think having had some preparation beforehand in other workshops in other places made me realize how little I had personally processed a lot of the material that you receive in other trainings. Mm. So they're more about how do I appear to people? How do I perform so that people know that I have good intentions, that I am a good person, that I am worth their time, rather than how do I make a real connection with this other person and then come up against assumptions that I had made that I had never tested out, mm, that were never challenged in any way.
Okay.
And these conversations were all about, here's one, let's process it.
Yeah.
Here's another one, let's process that. And so if you, it's very uncomfortable in the moment, but it's very liberating to be through the other, to survive it and be out the other side.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really explain it. It's it. The only word I can think of is liberating.
Mm-hmm. Tiffany, the way that Touchy Topics Tuesday started, it was with people in the Shaw neighborhood,
yes,
right? Speaking to that relational priority.
Yes.
What was one of the topics or one of the questions that got asked in this space of, you know, no rules, that made you realize how big a job you had ahead of you?
So to Margaret's point, there were many, but I can speak to one specifically that that really set me on a journey of my own learning, of my own personal growth and learning. Not just doing this from a communal aspect, but I really had to dig deep and understand what had happened to me in this moment. We were having a particular conversation, and initially I was the only Black person in the conversation. So this was typically maybe a group of 6 to 8 with me being the only Black, or if there was another Black or person of color, we were still the minority in the group. And I just remember there was a woman who said to me, as we were having a conversation around whatever the topic, but she said to me, "You're a credit to your race." And like, there was supposed to be this visceral reaction for me, right? This rejection of the notion that is true, that there was supposed to be that. But what happened when she said that, something on the inside of me took that as I embraced that as a compliment and not a backhanded one. So that was a point for me that's like, wait a minute, what is happening? Why am I accepting this? Why does this feel good to me? Why aren't I upset? I mean, I projected that I was upset because that's what I was supposed to do. Mm. But when I started to peel back the layers of what was happening on the inside of me, I had to come to grips with, if all of my life I've been told to stand apart from everything that represents my race or culture or ethnicity, and someone finally recognizes that, then for me it felt like I had arrived. But man, who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Who acknowledges that part of them exists, and who can actually have that spoken to them and then like take it and kind of process it later and have to deal with that. So that was one of the deeper learning moments for me. Mm-hmm. But there were all type of questions that came up. This gentleman asks, when do Black people train their children to jaywalk? There are a lot of questions that people asked, and some of the questions were not surprising because they were tropes that I had heard about people who look like me or others all of my life. But some of them were very, very new and very surprising for me to have to kind of navigate in that space.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, you sighed and drew a very long breath. When we come back after this short break, I want you to talk to us a little bit about that, as well as the assumptions that you mentioned. We will be back shortly after this short break. Stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Tiffany Robertson, founder of Touchy Topics Tuesday, and Margaret Weck, a participant in the Touchy Topics Tuesday series. Touchy Topics Tuesday organizes and facilitates conversations about race and identity to create and strengthen interpersonal relationships. Before the break, I'd asked Tiffany a question about some of the memorable questions that you received and the things that you had experienced sort of early on in the Touchy Topics Tuesday conversations. And you sighed quite deeply, Margaret. Why that reaction? And how is it connected to what you had said about having to challenge or recognize some of the assumptions that you had had previous to being part of this series?
So I heard Tiffany talk about a comment that someone had made, which clearly indicated a racial bias and was done in a way that might have been excused away as a joke or something else, a microaggression against her and against her whole race. And I just sighed because once I've engaged in this work with Tiffany, it's sort of like learning how to read. You don't always remember the point at which lines on the page suddenly become words and you can see that they're words. But once you can't stop seeing them. So this whole process has sensitized me to statements that I make as soon as they've left my mouth, hopefully before they leave my mouth, that show my ongoing assumptions and prejudices and bias, unconscious biases, but I see them now everywhere, and I am just so aghast at myself that it took me until into my mid-50s before I could see them at all.
Yeah.
And now I see them everywhere.
And I think to that point and to your earlier question, Elaine, about what's different from TTT, I think acknowledging and bringing those implicit biases to the forefront and making them very explicit in that space, in the TTT space, so that we can arrest them real time. We have to practice. We have to name them and own them somewhere so that we can arrest them real time. So I think that's been a huge part of the journey for participants and myself as well. The drawback, though, is you get so used to saying the quiet part out loud at TTT, you take it to other spaces where that's not the case.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that something that you found, Margaret?
Yes, it is. It is not a universal thing. What, just because I see these things, the amount, as Tiffany was talking about, you then hear things from people that you have been engaged in relationships with outside of TTT, and then all of a sudden they will say something like this that shows a deeply unprocessed bias of theirs, and then what am I called on to do? So then I have to, in real time, in talking with this person, decide what is my role here? Is my role to, how do I push this forward to get them to become aware of their biases without, is this relationship important enough? Is it important enough for me to do the pushing, or is it unimportant enough and not worth the energy I'm going to have to expend in order to help them expand their consciousness?
Yeah. And I think this also relates to another term that you had used, which was to perform. What is the difference between performing and taking action? Is there a difference?
For me, and Tiffany can talk about it from her perspective, for me, it's the, what is my intent? Is my intent to be perceived by others as having certain values, or are my actions stemming from the values that I'm attempting to live?
Mm-hmm.
So it's viewpoint. Yeah. Is it from my perspective? Am I acting out of my viewpoint, or do I want to be perceived as having a particular viewpoint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's born out of a place of our communities were really built and designed historically around segregation, right? An intentionally segregated community. And so we were intentional about performing. We were performance driven in other communities because we did not consider certain people part of our community, right? So TTT,
such as,
yeah.
I mean, who were we not considering as part of our communities?
We don't, anyone who's different from us in different aspects. And when you think about the intentionality of segregation, that's why TTT is intentionally integration, because I think it's something we never explored. We've only known and designed community around people who thought like us, who operated like us, who made us very comfortable. And so TTT kind of operates as less intentionally integrate outside of that and remove the performance. But that takes for you to really acknowledge your motives and for the relationship to be central to mm-hmm. how you move, so that it doesn't become performative.
Yeah. So we mentioned at the top that it's been 10 years now since the deaths of Michael Brown Jr. and Von Derrick Myers Jr. And we've spent a lot of time reflecting on what's happened in that decade. And I can speak for myself personally, but also here at the station, on the show, St. Louis on the Air, there's a whole podcast that is devoted to kind of looking at what has changed over the last 10 years, the We Live Here podcast. And in August, there was a community conversation that was hosted by NPR at Greater St. Mark Church. And at that event, a member of the audience stood up and expressed how she's tired of all the talking. And she's not alone, right, in feeling that. What is the purpose of continuing these TTT conversations years later, Tiffany?
Wow, I feel so useless right now. I feel complete. No, there is a purpose, and I completely get that that point of view, because people don't often see the way that we typically talk and have conversations doesn't move us to increase capacity to build community. It just gives us a lot more information, and that can leave us feeling apathetic instead of motivated to go deeper and do other things. But I think the point of continuing these conversations for me is to really build a different type of community from the micro level that can then add some support to these what I call the mezzanine and macro levels of systems course correction, so mm-hmm. to speak, of really supporting people who are working at systemic levels and at community levels. But without that groundwork, that footwork of just having community of people who are different, people you can synergize with, where you can synergize, and people who you know, okay, I can't tag them in on this issue because they have a different value system related to this, but this thing over here, and I think that's what we're missing. Our value systems don't always, we don't get to name them, we don't get to own them, and then we don't get to stay in relationship with others who don't share them all the time. And so that mezzanine level kind of never gets built where we can really start to offer that community support in that level, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. What benefit, Margaret, do you think there has been in the conversations? I mean, do you feel at this point, compared to 10 years ago, that there is greater awareness among the people you know about how not just to perform like you know what's up, but to actually know and to be very conscientious about learning, about interacting, breaking down assumptions?
It varies, obviously, from person to person. I think all I can really speak to is the change that I know that I've felt in myself.
Mm-hmm.
That I, speaking, Tiffany talks about building capacity. I know in myself I have a greater ability to actively, deliberately engage with people who I know I disagree with and stay in that zone of uncomfortable disagreement longer and work towards finding the common humanity that joins us that then can be used to build something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the purpose of our talking now, continuing to talk, is about not just changing surface behavior, but changing the curiosity about what it is that has shaped other people to hold positions that are different than mm-hmm. mine, and where is our common humanity, because that's where our solutions are going to come from.
Have you been spurned by anyone, Margaret, over the last several years? You said you started in 2019,
yeah.
But being spurned by someone who later sort of came around to a different place?
Well, I was telling Tiffany, my church has a Black Lives Vigil every Saturday, and people will come up and offer their opinions to us mm-hmm. about the whole Black Lives Matter movement. And I have now developed the capacity to stay engaged with that person who comes up with a negative thing
mm-hmm.
and listen to what it is they have to tell me and make sure I understand what it is they have to tell me, agree with what I can agree with. And I find if I can get to that point where I can find something that we can agree about, that legitimately agree about, not manufacture something,
mm-hmm.
oh yes, we all think this, obviously, I can actually get them to look me in the eyes and listen to the next thing that mm-hmm. I say.
Was there something else?
No, that's that.
I think another aspect is this is not just one conversation. These conversations are weekly, and some of the participants we met weekly for 5 years straight. They stay engaged. I mean, that was kind of like a marriage, that relationship, mm-hmm. those relationships. Mm-hmm. They were long term. We spent time with each other's families. Every Tuesday, it had the potential to be contentious, but the relationship bond was so strong that we were committed to the community that we were building
mm-hmm.
outside of those conversations.
That's really important that the process works because people are committed to not getting offended, walking up and walking out of the room, but getting offended, figuring out why they're offended, and expressing what it is about that offended them
mm-hmm.
to that other person in real time, if at all possible, or the next session. But knowing that you're going to have to come back is what creates the trusting relationship that allows people then to be increasingly more honest as the sessions go on.
Mm-hmm. And TTT now is Touchy Topics Tuesday, is now something that is part of what certain organizations and businesses are bringing in to learn about race, how people can relate with one another, going back to this, that word about relationship mm-hmm. and interpersonal relationship. Has entering into those kinds of spaces Has it changed how touchy conversations go because, like, it is in a professional environment? Or have you actually found that when people are able to be honest with one another in a place where they know they're going to have to come back, that there is more change that happens than with, you know, doing an annual DEI sort of training?
Yeah, I really appreciate that, because people, the participants are vetted, and there is, we still have to consider like power dynamics and structures when we go into an organization or business. Obviously, you don't want to sit there with the person you report directly to and talk about these things. That's going to add a layer of awkwardness that we don't need to. So there is some vetting to it. But for the most part, yes, regardless of where, whether it's within an organization or people are coming to TTT sessions, if they self-select in or the organization is sending them to the sessions, there is absolutely a shift that occurs. It's transformative in that people become multipliers of this space. The liberation that Margaret spoke about is something that they want to carry with them into other spaces, just not even their professional, but socially, even within their families and with their spouses, things that they may have had some trepidation about talking about, that they're now, they have that capacity. It's uncomfortably necessary that they work through it, and they have some tools and techniques, because it's either that or we implode. Like, we're going to have to learn to really coalesce around some things where we can, and we have to figure out what that is. And we have to allow that to work individually and within community. So I think there is a transformative piece to it, that it does shift the atmosphere. Can I do a shout out?
Mm-hmm,
I just want to shout out to my friend, Dr. Grace Lee, over at MICDS. I hope you're listening to me and all of my MICDS cultural competency participants. So thank you.
Well, there's clearly a lot more that we could talk about. That's all we have time for today, but thank you each for joining. Tiffany Robertson is the founder of Touchy Topics Tuesday, and Margaret Weck is a participant in the Touchy Topics Tuesday series. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.